It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The most recent Wisconsin Youth Risk Behavior Survey reveals 18% of Wisconsin high school students report being bullied at school. And nationwide, about one in five students say they've experienced bullying. That analysis is from the federal government's bullying prevention effort. Thanks to Scott in Wanakee and Tiffany in Blue River for suggesting we talk about bullying. And you can be part of the conversation. Call in with a question, share comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Libby Strunz is a school mental health consultant with the Department of Public Instruction, part of its Student Services Prevention and Wellness team. Libby, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So explain to us how your team supports Wisconsin schools with this issue.
Thanks, Kate. There is lots that the Student Services Prevention and Wellness team is doing to provide resources and professional learning with the goal of reducing bullying in Wisconsin. So one resource that we have released for schools within the last year is our Bullying Prevention Toolkit. And this is developed in partnership with Dr. Chad Rose and the University of Missouri Bully Prevention Lab. I know we'll be hearing from Dr. Rose in just a bit. And this toolkit serves as a resource for schools who are working to implement and strengthen their comprehensive approach to bullying prevention and response. So I will note that it's a guidance document. It's not a mandated resource. And the toolkit has a couple of different parts. So the first part provides guidance for schools on bullying prevention practices. So this can include educating students and staff and caregivers about bullying, establishing a bullying prevention task force or team of people at the school who are dedicated to this work, and then also creating a bullying prevention action plan. And we also know, and the toolkit encourages, that all of this work can be integrated into existing school climate and behavioral work that a school is doing. And then that second part of the toolkit provides resources for bullying response, because we know that it's very important for schools to have clear and consistent reporting and investigation procedures.
And so between the prevention and the response, those pieces in this toolkit are really supposed to address this issue. Can you give us, how much do schools grapple with? Is it just, some schools and not others, or do all schools really have this issue?
I think, unfortunately, it's accurate to say that schools across our state and schools across our nation and truly schools across our world struggle with bullying. And that's why both parts of that toolkit are really important, because we know that no matter how hard we work to prevent and reduce bullying, there will still be cases of bullying that occur. So it's really important that schools respond in a way that's equitable and consistent and involves students and families.
The Department of Public Instruction says students must have a clear understanding of what bullying is and the difference between peer conflict and bullying. How does your team help schools distinguish?
Great question. So that information is covered in our Bullying Prevention Toolkit. It's also covered in some of the other resources we have on our website. So we have a module series, a learning series for educators that is also done in partnership with Dr. Chad Rose. I know he's going to be talking more about that in a bit. And we also have a recorded webinar series that's available. And we also do in-person conference presentations throughout the state with some of the professional organizations that reach educators. So we work to get that message out so that educators and caregivers and students can all have a clear idea of what's bullying and what's not.
Libby Strunz is with us, school mental health consultant at the State Department of Public Instruction, as we talk about bullying prevention and response. Call in questions and comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Libby, we heard from Tina in Milwaukee, who called in and asked if the ways that adults treat each other, if that affects students and prevents or encourages bullying behavior.
Absolutely. And I think that one thing that's important to understand about bullying prevention is that it's most effective in the context of larger school climate work. So when we talk about bullying prevention, we're not just talking about implementing a specific curriculum, although there's certainly excellent bullying prevention curriculums out there, but we're also talking about creating a school climate where there is a sense of safety and support, where kids feel belonging and empowerment, where they have strong relationships with trusting, caring educators, and where they see those educators and other adults in their life treating one another with respect. So one thing that I want to share is that our team's work on bullying prevention, it doesn't exist in isolation. So for example, our team does work also on social emotional learning, or SEL, and research consistently supports that SEL programs can effectively reduce bullying behaviors by promoting social emotional competence amongst both students and adults, fostering positive relationships, and working to create a supportive school environment. So I absolutely think that adult behavior and the school climate in general is an important factor in reducing bullying overall.
I wonder, what if a parent or a caregiver isn't aware that the bullying behavior is going on in their child? I mean, is there a disconnect in communication about bullying?
So that's one thing that we encourage. And there's actually a set of specific resources in the bullying prevention toolkit designed to engage families and caregivers, because that's another really essential part of our bullying prevention and response work. So there's lots of ways that schools can engage caregivers and families, helping to educate them about what bullying is, how they report bullying if their child is experiencing that, and really making sure that they're engaged throughout that process. Because sometimes there is a disconnect between school and home, and a parent might not be aware of what's going on. And there's a couple resources that I would point parents towards that are really helpful in staying engaged. We have some on our DPI bullying prevention webpage. And the easiest way to access that webpage, which is where the toolkit is also located, is to go to the DPI website and use that search bar at the top and just search bullying prevention, and it will take you to that page. So that has some resources for parents that are part of that bullying prevention toolkit. It has some resources for parents to guide them through what they can do if their child is experiencing bullying. And another resource that I really strongly recommend to caregivers and parents is stopbullying.gov. It has a wide variety of resources. It's written in a way that's accessible to students and to caregivers. And it includes some things like having conversations with your student about their school day and recognizing warning signs that bullying might be occurring, so that it increases the chance that parents are having those conversations and are aware if their child is being bullied at school.
Let's bring in Mark in Milwaukee. Mark, go ahead with your question.
Oh, thank you so much, Kate, for dealing with such an important issue. Sometimes we lose sight of the ways in which the news stories that you're reporting are connected. For example, we're talking about bullying, and the news story before that was about the unfortunate police officers who had abused those two men. And sometimes the bullies are the ones who grow up to become, bully in chief, so to speak. My question for your guest is, you talked about many tools in the toolkit for the that set out things like rules for reporting and investigating bullying. But what about for the amelioration of the situation, for punishment or repercussions that can try to stop things? Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Libby, go ahead.
That's a great question, Mark. Our state statute on bullying does not require school districts to respond in a specific way to bullying. School districts are required to have a bullying prevention policy in place, but how they respond to that is a local control decision. And what we recommend can vary case to case, but in some cases, it can be helpful for a school district to provide not just consequences, but social emotional education for those students who are engaging in bullying. Oftentimes, a student who's engaging in bullying might have deficits in those competencies, those social emotional competencies that are causing them to act in ways that are not pro-social with their peers. And so going beyond just providing consequences and working with that student to build skills in peer relationships are really important because, Mark, as you said, we know that there can be long-term consequences, not just for students who are bullied, but students who engage in bullying. So we want to help them to build skills and prevent, build skills and prevent that behavior from happening in the future.
Libby, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Libby Strenz is a school mental health consultant at Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. We continue this conversation ahead, exploring a bullying prevention training course for Wisconsin educators. Call in with a question. Share your perspective, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore new strategies in bullying prevention training and interventions. Call in with a question, share thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Chad Rose is an associate professor in the Department of Special Education at University of Missouri, director of the MISU Ed Bully Prevention Lab, delivering its training course in Wisconsin. Chad, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Your lab examining best practices to prevent and respond to bullying. Your research also focusing on bullying among students with disabilities. What are you learning?
So we're learning a lot. We started this work really just trying to understand bullying and why kids engage in bullying and the outcomes associated with it. And so probably the biggest takeaway that we have is our findings have suggested that kids with social and communication skill deficits tend to have the highest likelihood of being involved in bullying.
And so, you have put together a training course. Can you talk a bit about what it entails?
For sure. So the training course was developed because there are a number of states that require training for educators according to their state legislation. And so what we're doing was trying to meet those demands and also provide educators with sound instruction in relation to bullying prevention. So the training includes four modules. The first module is really what bullying is. The definitions, predictive and protective factors, warning signs. And then the next three modules, we really get into interventions and we start our interventions at the foundation. And that means we talk about climate assessments, identifying youth who may be at greater risk. Then we talk about what we do at the school level for all students. Then we get into targeted instruction for youth who may need support in specific skill areas. And then we get into individualized interventions that are related to those kids that may engage in high rates of bullying behavior or those youth who may experience high victimization.
What is the role of youth here, of the kids, peer involvement and their interactions or being a bystander versus adults intervening and applying, the things they've learned?
For sure. So one thing that I have to note first is bullying is a social construct, meaning that bullying happens within these social environments. And so peers play a critical role in that. And so part of what we talk about in the modules is kids need to know what to do, what to say, and who to tell when they witness or experience bullying. And that's the charge of the school and the local district in determining kind of the protocol for teaching peers what to do, what to say, and who to tell. But that's the crux of the foundation of any bullying prevention programs. Now, educators, in addition to a lot of what Libby said, educators are responsible for knowing how to respond to the victimization, how to address the bullying itself, and also having strategies in relation to protecting reporters who do want to make reports but are afraid to.
Can you talk further about that, protecting reporters and, encouraging what happens when, the student is actively defending someone who's being bullied? I mean, could that in itself produce adverse outcomes for the victim and the person who is trying to protect that person?
It is possible. I think schools that approach bullying prevention through a social emotional lens, and really focus on social and communication skills and reinforcing these skills, have a higher likelihood of reducing bullying within their schools. Also, schools, and this is included in the toolkit that's available. Schools should have clear reporting mechanisms that allow students to make reports in various different ways. They should be able to make anonymous reports if they don't feel comfortable in disclosing who they are. Schools could use electronic reporting procedures, and teachers should be trained in how to interview a student if a student wants to make an oral report. And so it really is a combination of setting a school climate that is designed to, support student development in relation to bullying reduction, as well as making sure teachers are aware of what to do.
Talking with Chad Rose, who leads Wisconsin's online bullying prevention training course for educators. Call in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Chad, our teens live so much of their lives on their phones these days. What effect does this training have on cyberbullying?
Cyberbullying is an interesting topic, and we've been exploring it quite frequently. And one thing people should know is that involvement in social media and online interactions is a part of youth's daily socialization. And so really youth can't distinguish how they socialize in physical or virtual spaces. And so what we really do is we talk to schools in understanding digital citizenship and training digital citizenship in schools. And that is not only keeping kids safe online and what safety actually means, but it's also teaching kids choice making and responsible decision making in online spaces, but then also recognizing the permanency of what they do and what they post online.
Can you measure the effectiveness of the training that you're able to offer educators?
We can, and we've done something similar in other states, in other districts, and we have measured it. And what we're seeing is we're seeing an increase in knowledge and skills among educators, but also an increase in self-efficacy in knowing what to do in situations where they receive bullying reports.
What can educators do to create that safe environment, that positive climate for students to be willing to feel comfortable and come forward and report bullying?
I think Libby hit the nail on the head when she was discussing social and emotional learning. I'm an advocate for social and emotional learning. I'm an advocate for embedding social and communication skills into the daily curriculum. I believe that if we start to look at the socialization of our youth as just as important as we do the academic achievement of our youth, then we would establish a stronger and more supportive climate. Because while academics are incredibly important, how we socialize when we leave school is just as important for lifelong success.
Chad, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Chad Rose is director of the MISU Ed Bully Prevention Lab. It works with the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction to offer this free online bullying prevention training course for Wisconsin educators. We turn next to an elementary school principal sharing strategies on creating a school environment that helps prevent bullying behavior. And you can call in with a question, share your thoughts along the way. The number is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks to Tiffany in Blue River and Scott in Wanakee for suggesting we discuss bullying. An elementary school principal compares bullying to a type of contagious virus. When left unattended, a child being bullied may one day use bullying behavior themselves. Call in with a question. Share comments. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kathleen Corley is principal of Red Cedar Elementary School in Bluffton, South Carolina. New book is called The Magical Place We Call School, Creating a Safe Space for Learning and Happiness in a Challenging World. Kathleen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
So as principal of an elementary school with about 600 students, how do you view your role?
Chief construction cone mover, motivator, safety officer, facilitator, pretty much anything I can do to make sure the teachers have what they need so that they can meet students' needs.
How does that impact the environment of your school and the climate there?
Our teachers here, I believe, know that I will support them in what they try to do. Sometimes you hear from teachers in other schools around the country who say, I would like my classroom environment to be different. I would like for discipline to be tightened up. But if I try to do anything that is beyond what has been done before and get the same results, I may not have the backing of my principal, which means I'm vulnerable to whatever some parents might think is too much for their children, or I'm expecting too much. So as long as I'm supporting the teachers, they're able to do what they need to do, including discipline and letting administration know when something has gotten too far and we need to fix it.
You say that the magic happens in the classroom, and as you support your teachers, how do you create magic at school while also addressing and eliminating bullying behavior?
When students are engaged in what's going on in the classroom, that is, if it's not boring, they're far more likely to be attending to what's going on at school. We remind them every now and again. I write on everyone's report card, and I write quite a bit on their report cards, all 656 of them, that, you know, you come to school to learn. That is your job. So let's keep them all about their job as much as possible, but let's make it entertaining. Let's make it exciting. And our teachers want it that way. They can't wait to uncover something for their students. So that the teachers here make learning exciting as much as possible.
One of the students you bring up in the book is a child you name Matthew, and you discuss the importance of understanding the emotional needs of children, and you share the story of the second grader, Matthew, who you see push another student on school grounds. What has Matthew's behavior taught you?
That was my first year as a principal. And Matthew was a new student. And he made it so that he was trying to tell his parents that being in the third school in his short career, that he just couldn't take it. And I didn't recognize as much as I needed to recognize at the time. He pushed a child in front of a bus, just as the bus was about to leave. The bus driver stopped the bus. That wasn't a problem. I grabbed the child. That wasn't a problem. But I was dumbfounded by what Matthew was doing. Basically, when we figured it out, what Matthew was trying to say is, I'm tired of leaving schools that I don't want to leave, and I can't do this anymore. So what I'm going to do, since you won't keep me with my friends, I'm going to make it so that no one likes me here, and I won't have any friends. So whenever I do leave here, I won't care. It's not going to be a thing.
As you work through this with the parents, what would you have done differently in the situation?
When I talked with the parents, they didn't seem to think that was such a big deal, that their son was having a problem with separating from other children in those schools. So, I didn't push it. I needed to push it, but as a first-year principal, I just didn't. They were very casual about it. Oh, he doesn't really care. Well, I get the sense, Mom and Dad, that and he told me that you said you would keep him in touch with the kids in his old school. Yeah, well, that that wasn't a big deal. We know that wasn't a thing. It didn't really matter. I think it mattered to him, and that's as far as I went with it. But what I do now is, Mom and Dad, please remember that children have almost no say in when there is going to be a move, and you're doing all the decision-making. They're not.
We're talking with South Carolina Elementary School Principal Kathleen Corley. New book is called The Magical Place We Call School, as we discuss bullying prevention intervention efforts. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Let's explore a cyberbullying incident that happened at school. And you write that third grade teachers set up an online chat room for 90 third graders. What happened there?
The chat room was part of an educational program. So what they were supposed to be doing was discussing the projects that were posed through that application. And that's what they did do when they were third graders. And the third grade teachers were, of course, monitoring it. Then they became fourth graders. And the third grade teachers forgot to take down that chat room. The students discovered it and went dark very quickly. It seems like they don't know what to say to each other. We find this with high school age students as well. There are students who will text in a very nasty way, especially in a group chat, make fun of someone in the group, and they will sit next to those same students and have no issues with them whatsoever. They'll be friends. And it's almost like they're playing a game, but there are some children who are affected by that. No matter if you and I are 10 years old and I say something nasty about you, you say something nasty about me, there are five other people in the chat, somebody's still going to feel some kind of way about that. Mm-hmm. Even if we're doing a project together, even if we live next door to each other and we play together at times, someone's going to feel hurt, as well they should, because when you make fun of someone, when you talk down to them, call them names, it's very hard to emerge from that unscathed. So when we come upon issues like that, among other things that we do, is restorative justice, where the two people face each other and talk about what just happened, because the facing each other part doesn't happen in the chat. And I think that's a giant part of this. When they face each other and talk about what happened, and they see each other's eyes, and sometimes I'll draw attention to, look in Thomas's eyes right now. What do you see in his eyes? He's mad? I think maybe that, but what else? He's sad. Yes, he is. And you did that. And it's hard to undo it, but you can make it better by talking with him about it. Tell him what you were doing.
Do you have them read the critical comments they wrote while looking at the victim?
Sometimes, especially the older children, fourth and fifth grade. We're pre-kindergarten to fifth grade here.
I want to talk more about restorative justice, because we often think about it connected to the justice system. And do you see a place for these types of approaches in the elementary school setting?
Yes, absolutely. Some people think that restorative justice means a lack of consequences. Sometimes a child will be suspended for something if that's what the discipline code calls for, but they'll also be involved in restorative justice, because we need to make everybody whole here. We can't get beyond a thing just with the consequences. We need to know that everyone can move on from the problem.
And how much do apologies matter in that moment when they're all sitting in a small group?
They do matter. Most often we have students write a reflection about what they did. And if they're very small children, there are, I hate to say it, worksheets that have pictures of unhappy faces, et cetera, that where they can draw pictures adjacent to those already printed pictures to express their apology. So first they're writing the reflection. This is what I did. This is what I could have done. This is what I'm going to do going forward. And then the apology, sometimes written, always spoken to the child with one of us sitting there.
Kathleen Corley is an elementary school principal in Bluffton, South Carolina. New book explores ways to develop a positive culture inside schools. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about efforts to create a positive culture and learning environment at school that may help prevent bullying behavior. Kathleen Corley is an elementary school principal in South Carolina. New book is called The Magical Place We Call School. Call in with a question. Add your comments. 800-642-1234. Tyrone in Milwaukee is here. Hi, Tyrone. Go ahead.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for taking my call. Good morning, Miss Kathleen. Good morning.
Good morning, Tyrone.
Yes.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for the subject and the opportunity. Good morning, Milwaukee. Good morning, Wisconsinites. Yes, Tyrone W. speaking, northwest side of Milwaukee. A couple different things there. And a wonderful Good Friday, Resurrection Sunday, Palm Sunday to everyone and their family. God bless, be blessed, be well to all. Well, I'll tell you, it's sad. You know, what direction do the children have to go in when they have no outlet or release there? I mean, they've gone to the principal, they've gone to the counselor, they've gone to the teacher, and they feel their hands are tied. They have nowhere else to turn. Illustration would be some of these universities, and I'm assuming that bullying and what's it called there, hazing are pretty much one and the same, but on different levels. And these parents, they're paying their children to go to these universities and these colleges, and these sororities are doing this this hazing and stuff there, and you have actually people dying behind this stuff here. So it seems to me like it's on a different level from bullying to hazing and mm-hmm. on and on. But where does the individual have to turn when they say, well, I'm in this sorority, but I can't mm-hmm. go to anybody because I've got to do this thing here that's a ritual, but they're beating me, they're hazing me, just like the band member on the bus there. He got from the back of the bus there, he died before he could get to the front of the bus.
Tyrone, thank you so much for calling in and for sharing those difficult words. Kathleen, one piece of this is if a child is not being heard, not being believed, but also what happens when there is that peer pressure as well?
We have to get to the peer pressure. If you're talking about let's all go harass this person, peer pressure, and I think that's where you're going, yes?
I think so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This will be fun to harass Jonathan. We teach students in our counseling classes. We have classroom counseling where the counselor goes to each class to teach at their level how you stand up with someone. You don't stop a fight necessarily physically, but you use your words to stand up to the bully. Good example, there were two brothers who happened to witness another child who goes to our school at the baseball diamond put his sunglasses down and he walked away. By the time he came back, another child who does not go to our school took the sunglasses. The boy who owned them came back and said, hey, those are mine, give them back. And the other child said, not anymore, they're mine now. The other two boys said, no, that's not right. They were watching from afar. They walked up and said, no, those belong to Anderson. You give them back now. It's not right for you to take them. The other boy considered it for a while and gave them back. It doesn't always end that way. But we reward students for doing things like that. We have a book vending machine. You can earn a gold coin to put in the book vending machine. 2 days ago, those boys got coins because they did that. The whole of the neighborhood, the whole of the classroom, the whole of the school, the whole of all the parents need to be on the same side when it comes to this. They need to be looking out for what is right and be ready to stand up for what is right. To Tyrone's question about who do you report this to? Every college, every university, every school district has to have, by law, appropriate means for reporting bullying, for dealing with bullying based on the state laws. So we have an app called See Something, Say Something. Kids use it. Usually it's not bullying. It's just somebody being annoying, which is different than bullying, but we handle it as though it's bullying. When we get a See Something, Say Something notice, our superintendent gets it and four other people at district office who are there only for this purpose. So, and at colleges and universities, yes, the fraternity, sorority, hazing part seems to be dying a slow, slow, ever too slow death. And it's unfortunate that it's taking so long for it to be extinguished. That is not what we deal with, obviously, in an elementary school, but the seeds can certainly be planted. Yeah, it's my right to do this to somebody else. No, it is not your right. You do not have the right to mess with somebody else. In the morning, the last thing I say on announcements, ask good questions, make good decisions, leave things better than the way you found them, especially people's hearts, and always show respect. I think it gets through. Not positive, but they act like it does.
Thank you for sharing that. Barry in Viroqua is here with a question. Barry, go ahead.
Yes, I just want to make a comment that with the issues that you're discussing and the last caller, we are facing so many social emotional behavioral issues in schools that affect the future lives of just millions and millions of people. And the way we handle most of that in schools these days is through punishment. And it's not that people shouldn't be held accountable, but punishment, as research points out, doesn't really work that well. And what I would like to suggest to parents and communities is that to really develop healthy individuals, we ought to have two adults in every classroom from kindergarten through fourth grade, thereby providing the kinds of support, tenderness, loving, caring, etc., that a single teacher, given the
constraints,
social and behavioral today. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Barry. Kathleen, what do you make of that?
Barry's right on the mark. In our situation, we have small class sizes that are maybe between 18 and 20. The state law is 30. We can't go over 30. We would never in these days have 30. Kindergarten teachers, kindergarten and pre-K teachers have assistants, and the kindergarten assistants are shared with first grade. Second, third, fourth, and fifth do not have assistants, but there are additional people who do assist. Our support staff has interventionists for reading and for math and tutors, and most often those folks are in the classroom along with the teachers. We have a high Hispanic population, second language population, about 45%. And those students have additional help from, now they're called multilingual teachers. The names change, ESL, ESOL, over time, but they are to support those students in learning English and the rest of their subjects. The support people are important, and the class size is important, because Barry's right that there are children with many different emotional issues, and they need to be addressed. So they have individualized education plans that we follow with special needs teachers and other interventionists to help. In the old one-size-fits-all days, where the teacher sort of stood at the front of the classroom and taught, and the children were to take all of that in, and if they got it, that's great, and if they didn't, well, maybe the teacher helps them at recess.
That's not
those days.
They're over. And Kathleen, we're out of time, but thank you for joining us. Kathleen Corley, principal at Red Cedar Elementary School, new book, The Magical Place We Call School. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network.